Hello listeners, and welcome to the AfriWetu platform, where we look to celebrate African history, people and culture by telling our story. As always, our hope is that it fills you with enough curiosity to go and do your own deeper research. Karibuni to any new listeners to the AfriWetu world. We invite you to check out previous AfriWetu episodes, which can be found on this podcast platform. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we are in the southeast of our continent for part one as we journey to meet the dope kingdom of Eswatini. A shout out to my South Africans out there. AfriWetu has landed on your borders as usual. I apologize in advance for the mispronunciation of words that will most definitely happen. A quick thing before we begin, please remember to visit us on our socials. Our handle is at AfriWetu across all of them. Here we post interesting facts, stories, updates, and links for further study for any of you lovely people. Please remember also to tell your friends and families about us, yeah? For now, just sit back and enjoy the journey. Now, it's been an age since we last met, right? I mean, last time we met, we were in West Africa. Now we're in Eswatini, which is actually the first of the last two civilization episodes for this season. I can't believe that we're almost at the end. So we have just, from here, four more episodes to go. Let's start this episode with an interesting fact about this particular kingdom. It sits with a certain class of particular nation states that years and years post-imperialism decided to recapture their souls. Yes, I am being that intense. How, you ask? Well, they actually renamed their territories. So on the 19th of April, 2018, Ngwenyama Mswati III, on what was the 50th anniversary of independence, made the formal announcement that the Kingdom of Swaziland would from then on be called the Kingdom of Eswatini. And there's another reason why I wanted to highlight this from the offset, because for the purposes of this and the next episode on this kingdom, AfriWetu will refer to the Kingdom Eswatini and to the people as Eswati, not the Swazi. Eswatini literally means the place of the Swati, and the people there actually speak Siswati, which is a dialect of the Nguni language family. Right, now that we have that out of the way, remember to open up your maps. The modern day territory of the kingdom somewhat maps the original lands, which today covers about 17,000 square kilometers. The original boundaries that were well known included the Tembe River near Maputo in Mozambique, the Pongola River, and back up passing through Mahamba up to Zobudza and Hoho up north. Now let's swiftly go into the origin story. So this land that we're talking about, the original inhabitants of the area were actually the San people. And the San are an amazing people who have one of the most ancient cultures globally. Their territory, the San, spans across southern African countries of Angola, Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. They are a whole study in themselves, and for sure AfriWetu will cover them in the future. The Swati people are relatively recent inhabitants when you compare them to the San, obviously, arriving and settling in the 15th century. The people's origins and their ancestors can be traced back to Eastern Africa, having migrated southward following the East African coastline and settling in modern-day Mozambique first. It is from here that the descendants then made the move and the final migration further inland. As I said before, they're part of the Nguni language group of peoples. This group shares a common root language, aspects of their core culture, as well as their values. You, the AfriWatu, know a few of them well enough. They're actually the Swati's southern African neighbors, the Dembele from South Africa and Zimbabwe, as well as the Zulu people. AfriWetu covered the Zimbabwean Dembele and the Zulu in season 3, episode 7, and season 2, episodes 8 and 9, respectively. And speaking of these previous episodes, as you will hear in the next part of the origins, and for those of you keen listeners, you'll remember hints of this story from those other origin stories, right? So now, let's look at the story from the Emaswati perspective. If we go a few steps back, okay, a lot of steps back to the origins of the Swati, it starts as a tale of two princes, well, two brothers to be exact, Dlamini and Hlubi, and the issue of recognizing a rightful heir to their throne after their father, Chiflanga, died. It is in Maputo Bay of present-day Mozambique where we find a fully-fledged kingdom, a kingdom that followed a system of hereditary ascension to the throne of the eldest son succeeding the father. So far, so clear, right? Well, our Chiflanga had other plans, which went against his tradition. Basically, despite it, he favored having Hlubi, who was the younger of these two sons, as the next ruler. To justify his stance, he argued that Dlamini did not display the necessary traits to lead the people. These included those of generosity and humility. However, his favorite son had shown these true leadership traits and shown to have them in spades. This was a claim that was disputed by Dlamini's supporters because everybody could see the trick, right? So then Chiflanga decided to set a challenge that would be the final determining factor, which, quite frankly, was rigged from the start to his younger son's advantage. The challenge was this, that each of the sons was given an animal of equal size and weight to skin, and whomever completed the task fastest would become the next heir. So far, so fair, right? But to tip the balance and secure Hlubi's place, Langa gave him a sharp knife and Dlamini a blunt one. So of course this method the younger brother was bound to finish first, right? So sneaky. Dlamini is said to have accepted this fate and his brother became the heir apparent. It is rumored that he actually knew his father had played him and did not want to hold any grudge against his brother, and in fact in later years exonerated him from any wrongdoing. In time, the two brothers did go their separate ways. Dlamini, actually between circa 1720 and 1744, took the title of Gwenyama, which meant king, and which translates to lion, but not the king of the savannah, not that lion. But here the word is used in a reverential way in Siswati. So Dlamini started the migration, which we're going to hear about a little bit later. As he started the migration, en route he actually died. And when he died, he was succeeded by his son Ngwane, whose mother was Queen Layaka Duandwe. Ngwane is one of the most revered rulers of the kingdom, and like his father, he played a big part in the migration of his people, moving them from the Lumbumbu Mountains by the Pongola River to settle, first to the south and then later back towards the northern banks. He was said to be recognized as the first real Gwenyama of what we know as Eswatini. It is he who established the first capital of Zombodze. And now this is a good place to slide nicely to a very brief overview of the expansion. So the expansion of this kingdom is very closely linked to its origin, as much as the territory and assimilation of people was during the migration and the formation of the Dlamini clan. Those who were conquered fell into two general categories. The first were those who submitted without much incident, and most probably because of that they tended to find some level of favor. For example, they were allowed to keep their chiefs, and then these chiefs were treated with respect, they were able to maintain control and influence over their territories, and even had a political role in the central government through representation at the National Council. Then you had the second category, the more rebellious territories and leaders. They did not take to the Eswatini's expansion at all and fought it at every chance. This, more often than not, was actually a violent confrontation, which, when the Swati were successful, because usually they were, so those who are conquered have their men killed, their livestock and property confiscated, and then added to the wealth of the kingdom. So now, with that in mind, this expansion, as I said, was led in the beginning by Dlamini, who danced on his journey. Ngwane then picked up the mantle. He kept the migration further expanding, establishing the administrative capital, and once they were more or less settled, he then focused on acquiring lands from neighboring clans and chiefdoms, taking over these lands and building on the kingdom's economy and strengthening its military power in the region. On his death, Gwenyama Mswati took over, and just like his predecessors, continued on the path of growing the kingdom's territory. Although interesting, it's worth mentioning that on his ascent, he did what, to be honest, many do when faced with strong royal family lines. He eliminated any and all possible threats to his reign. And this was a good strategic move because this not only led to ensuring that his family dynasty was truly the dominant one, and then providing more stability than had been experienced in a number of years due to internal royal fighting, but in relation to our expansion, it most importantly meant that he was really able to focus on conquest abroad. And under his rule, he extended the kingdom's authority to the east, west, and even further north. Now, because we have touched on royal politics, it's only fair that we continue with this thread. So let's have a look at the throne politics of the ascension to said throne, because you know it can never be that simple when it comes to power, right? So Dlamini and his line dominated the kingship. That was a fact. And let's point out, I wanted to point out three things about this. First, when it came to the heir, if the oldest son died before taking the throne and he did not leave a son, then his brother had the right to claim the throne for himself. This made for some very fierce internal fighting, as the interpretation was sometimes fudged. Secondly, like in many civilizations, rules were not always hard and fast, and thus not static and could change depending on any major internal or external factors. This also applied to the ruling elite, and here namely the royal family, where succession was subject to wide interpretation at times. So what could this, and did this look like, you ask? Well, the next point should help contextualize it. So the last thing to be aware of is that the kingdom had a dual monarchy government. So they had the Gwenyama, we've heard about, and then they had the Gwenyama / Nkosi, the lion, which we've heard about. And then, very importantly, you had the Ndlovukati, which is a queen mother, and Ndlovukati translates loosely to the lady elephant. Despite the name, the Ndlovukati did not always mean it was the woman who bore the ruler who was the queen mother. She was always a woman of royal birth, and she was specifically chosen from particular noble houses and given the title after the previous monarch had died. Tradition was that she could not have more than one son, as this could lead to issues down the line, and this tradition was known as Inkosi Kalinyawa, the king is not followed by blood brothers. So with these three elements in play, one can see how on occasion disputes around succession could arise. Now, to add to the potential complexity, and in those cases where the Gwenyama does have an heir but has died with that son not being old enough or have come of age, then the kingdom is ruled by a caretaker structure. This is through the co-regents that are the late king's brother, who's a prince regent, and the Ndlovukati. So they would rule in the heir's stead until the boy king is ready to ascend to the throne. Now, the risk here is that the prince regent may not want to give up power problems, or the Ndlovukati would want to somehow get her own son into power problems, if indeed that was not her son who was the boy king. In fact, let's have a quick visit to the old kingdom and see what this looked like with a real life experience and example. Cool? The place, Eswatini. The time, His Highness Sobhuza's funeral. Everyone is eyeing the other with great suspicion, and you can feel the apprehension and cut the tension in the air with an assegai. The different families are positioning themselves and aligning themselves to their preferred allegiances of Sobhuza's sons. It is soon out that Mswati, one of the younger sons, has been named the new Gwenyama, and you can hear the shocked gasps and shuffling in the gathering. The boy hadn't even been circumcised. And then what of his older brothers? Like, what about Fokoti? I mean, he was already running one of the kingdom's provinces, successfully at that, so surely he was a better choice from a point of seniority as well as government. Well, this is going to be interesting. Everyone is now waiting to see which way the other princes will move. They too, as per tradition, have king chiefdoms that they run. So will they try to make their own claims? Or back either of their half-brothers? Or pick an uncle? The suspense is palatable. We hear a loud shout from across the hall. Fokoti is not having it. He has declared that he will be contesting Mswati being the heir. He and his delegation storm out of the capital, heading back to his territory. This is not good. And sure enough, word is soon out that he is amassing his troops. And true to this, he went ahead and mounted his attacks. Unfortunately for Fokoti, he was unsuccessful in this assault. And as we come back to the court, we hear from the courtiers some of the rumors as to why, according to them, this happened. So some say a member of one of the other prince's family said that many did not back him, opting instead to support Mswati. We hear from another family that they and others decided they're going to remain neutral and neither support nor contest either side. In addition, there were no other contenders to the throne, so it was literally just the two princes who were battling for this role. Then we hear about Mswati's mother. Well, she was a real astute one, that one. Having already succeeded in influencing changes in the kingdom's structure, including that of the military, playing to her advantage, and even more so because her son was still the boy king, she, together with Malumbule, his older brother, and Malunge, ruled as co-regents, solidifying her son's position. In fact, Mswati was formally installed after the revolt was quelled in circa 1839-1840. Now, keeping this in mind, and with Angwenyama installed, it's a good backdrop to look at the ruling elite. So let's leave them and let's go back to present day. So let's take a brief look at the flow of rulers, picking up from the death of Ngwane in the late 18th century, who was succeeded by his son Nduvungunye, who on his death, by the way, he was struck by lightning, which is a kind of taboo, so he was actually interred separately. But anyway, on his death, he was then succeeded by his son Somholo Sobhuza I. The last two monarchs faced the most challenging season in the formation of the kingdom, as they were locked into fighting with the Duandwandwe people, an enemy that was skilled in the art of battle led by Disingwayo and later his usurper Zwide. And then on top of that, they still had the ever-present threat from the Zulu people led by one Shaka. The ensuing wars between the two civilizations and the Zulu threat saw the Swati move their bases around often. Sobhuza, during this period, saw fit to strategically use the mountain case to withstand the onslaughts from these formidable foes. He moved his people north of the Isuthu River, and then once the enemy of his enemy, the Zulu, destroyed the Ndwande, he then moved them back to Ezulini Valley. He later expanded the territory to the north and included and absorbed the Mohahasha and Barberton. A fun fact. Remember our Sobhuza's sons? Well, speaking of enemies, this had not stopped Sobhuza from marrying Zwide's daughter, Talinde, and she was none other than our Mswati's mother. It is she who had taken over from Sobhuza on his death, and also from the Zwide family was Malumbule, the older brother who was ruling with her as co-regent on behalf of Mswati. So, clearly, sometimes, and pay attention to this, the enemy of my enemy's enemy is my family. Say it really slowly, and I swear to you, it'll make sense. Now, would you believe we've already come to the end of this one, this episode? So what we're going to look at is the world events that are happening at this time. In 1440, Oba Uware comes to power in the West African city of Benin and turns it into an empire. In 1453, the fall of Constantinople marks the end of the Byzantine Empire and the death of the last Roman Emperor, Constantine, and the beginning of the classical age of the Ottoman Empire, so a lot was happening then. In 1462, Mehmed the Conqueror is driven back by Prince Vlad III Dracula at the night attack. In 1462 as well, Soni Ali Ber, the ruler of the Songhai Empire, conquered Mali in the central Sudan by defeating the Tuareg contingent who were based at Timbuktu. Between 1494 and 1559, the Italian wars led to the downfall of the Italian city-states. In 1504, the foundation of the Sultanate of Sana'a by Amara Dunquas in what is now modern Sudan. In 1518, the Dancing Plague of 1518 begins in Strasbourg, lasting for about 1 month. And 1524 to about 1525, the German Peasants War in the Holy Roman Empire. So I'm going to bring this home now. And to start with, I have to admit something, Afriwatu. The Eswatini kingdom was one where I was really went in very ignorant of anything at all, but the fact that Mswati III changed its name from Swaziland to Eswatini. So studying this civilization was totally new, and I have loved every moment, as it is such a layered story. And in fact, this first part felt very much like a real family history that engulfs you, right? Well, at least that's how I felt. I do urge you, Afriwatu, to tune into part 2, because then we have some even more dope stories about this wonderful kingdom having set the stage. One of the few surviving ones, actually, which is today in the closest to its original form. And can I just say how much I enjoy what I do? African history is just so fantastic as far as I'm concerned. And if you're still listening to this till this particular minute, I'm guessing that you agree. So until next time, Ubarikiwe. Take it, 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 take it